Honda are already well known for producing some of the best naturally aspirated engines in the world. And what makes them better? Adding a turbocharger.
Welcome to High Performance Academy's Tuned In Field Report podcast series. In these special midweek episodes, we look back through our archives to find the best conversations we've had through years worth of attending the best automotive events across the globe. We've pulled the audio from these tech-filled interviews with some of the industry's most well-known figures and presented it in podcast format for you to enjoy as a quick hit of insider knowledge.
We're here with Mo with his EK Civic behind me. This is actually converted to four-wheel drive, built as a drag car by B2R Motorsport, and we're going to find out a little bit more about this build. For a start, Mo, let's get to the basics. The car hasn't actually run down the strip yet, so we can't talk numbers, can we?
Yeah, no, we haven't done anything more than a few test passes so far, so yeah.
Okay, let's get into the build itself, and the most obvious part is it's no longer running a B-series engine. You've got a K-series in it. What drove you to make that K-swap?
I think back in 2012, seeing them, I think that was the height of the K20 era, seeing them everywhere, and it was just something that I really wanted to enjoy and discover. You know, I remember the biggest thing about a K-series back then was the torque, you know, so like a 2.4 litre, the torque, just naturally aspirated feeling the torque was awesome, you know, so yeah, that's what it was really.
Okay. I mean, obviously a bigger capacity to start with, and it has got probably arguably one of the best flowing cylinder heads anywhere for a four-cylinder engine. However, you know, the stock K20 or K24 wasn't quite good enough for you. You've actually gone full billet as well. Yeah. What was the driving factor behind that decision? Were you aiming for power levels that you absolutely knew the stock block was not going to be capable of?
Yeah, so I would say it goes hand in hand with the four-wheel drive. Front-wheel drive, I don't think you'd ever really need, unless you're drag racing, more than what a stock motor can handle. So about that 370 kilowatt range, that's on the edge of its life almost. But as soon as you get four-wheel drive and you get that first gear traction at raw racing or on the street or whatever, you automatically want more, you know. So it gets addictive at that point. So then, you know, you obviously, I jumped a few steps. I went straight to 1,000 horsepower, and then we started learning limitations with the, you know, so, you know, you had head lifts, we had cooling issues, we had bearing issues, we had whatever issue you could think of.
And these all start popping up around that 1,000 horsepower mark?
Yeah, and another thing is I would say in America, because these are big in America, for them a sleeved block is much more cheaper. So it would probably cost them $1,000 to $2,000 USD. Whereas over here, we've got to buy a block core, get them to sleeve it, and then the shipping is so expensive. It's actually about half the price of a billet block. So by the time you invest into a sleeve block that does crack, they do crack, it's just you're on a limited lifespan.
The other thing I was just add there with the sleeve block, I think people would assume that it is a fix for all of the problems that you have when you're making high power. But you also need to be very, very careful about who is doing the machine work to install the sleeves, because sometimes you're fixing one problem, but the number of times I've seen other problems created with the sleeves dropping in operation and then the head gasket leaks anyway. So you sort of fix one problem and can potentially create others. So you need to be very careful about who's doing that sleeving. In terms of the actual block itself, who is the manufacturer?
Bullet Racing Engineering, I think they're called, yeah.
So Australian made, well known in the billet block area. So the other aspect is when we go to billet blocks, often people will go to a dry block for a dedicated drag application. By that I mean there is no coolant passing through the block. Great for strength and works well for drag racing, but really does limit you in terms of what you can do with the car. I've seen a radiator in this. Obviously, you haven't gone that way. Why did you decide to stay wet block?
I think, you know, we're not at that point yet where we need a full dry deck. The other thing is we like to do a lot of roll racing in Sydney. And when you get to eliminations, it's essentially pass after pass after pass. So don't want the complications of a dry deck or, you know, a separate head or, you know, block getting too hot, things like that. So I thought, you know what, for now I just can leave it simple, keep it wet deck. I know it's working. We figured most of the cooling issues out. and we'll worry about that later. Otherwise, if it goes to a full drag car, yeah, I see the dry deck, never lifting heads and stuff like that and stuff like that, you know.
There's two elements actually there that I just want to clarify as well, because you'd use the term dry deck and wet deck. So that's really talking about whether or not water is transferred from the block up into the head. Advantage with that is if we go dry deck where there isn't that transfer, if the head does lift, we don't get combustion pressure making its way into the water jacket, which then means we don't get water under the tires. So that's really important for safety and reliability. However, wet deck that dry deck does bring in the difficulties of the plumbing, where you're getting the water from the block to the head. That's obviously external, so a little bit more complexity around there. Now, in terms of the rest of the rotating assembly, crankshaft, connecting rods, pistons, can you give us some insight into what you're using?
Sure. So me, I'm an OEM guy. I bought a brand new K20 crank from Honda. I've always kept OEM cranks. I've never seen them break. You know what I mean? I have seen billet ones break and stuff like that. And I think people move more towards the billet stuff when they de-stroke, stroke up, etc. I think the Honda ones are so reliable. There's really not many options, even if you did want to go aftermarket.
I think a lot of people overlook that some of these factory crankshafts are actually exceptionally good. And even though it's designed for a low horsepower, naturally aspirated engine in stock form, these are a quality forged crankshaft. They are really, really good. And you can sometimes go well over 1,000 horsepower with that stock crankshaft. The benefit is, if and when it does start to crack or fail, it's also much cheaper to replace than a billet crankshaft, correct?
Oh, much, much cheaper. The other thing is as well, off-the-shelf rods, off-the-shelf rotating assembly period. You know what I mean? I know a few friends with billet or D-stroke or whatever, it's 6 month wait for rods, just rods. You know?
So having that off-the-shelf availability means if you need to replace a part, you can do it almost instantly.
Of course. I was going to do a 2.2 litre setup because this was a 2.4. And then just looking into how long I had to wait for a set of four rods or whatever, or if I broke a crankshaft or anything, it was 6 months the car's out down. So, you know, and they're not cheap parts to really keep stock, or if the part fails, then you've got a useless brand new part in the box there. So, you know, keep it simple, keep it OEM. I want a combo that I can pretty much buy the parts in 2-3 weeks and get back together. Because the reality is we are racing and, you know, things do go wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. So ultimately, you are at 2.4.
No, it's 2 liter now.
Okay, 2 liter. Yeah. I was going to ask the difference there, or the way up between the 2.4, the additional capacity, the additional bottom end torque and boost response you get with larger turbos. How did you weigh that up against the ability to rev the engine? I mean, obviously, you've decided to stay 2 liter.
Yeah. Well, I was originally 2.4, but I had loads of issues with harmonics. So once you get up to around over 9,500, 10,000 RPM with a 2.4 liter, you either have to de-stroke or just drop the rev limit down back to 9. The reason why I went 2 liter was because that was Honda's engine that they designed to rev. And, you know, I just thought with the shorter stroke and all that, it would be much, much happier to rev. The interesting thing what we did see is the 2 liter actually makes more power up top with the RPM. So it carries power way better, whereas the 2.4 you've got down low torque brings on the turbo better, but it drops off a lot earlier than 2 liter.
And I think it's all about sort of understanding your application as well. The 2.4, if it's a street application or maybe a hill climb car, you want that lower bottom end torque and the boost response. But when you're drag racing or roll racing, you're launching off a two-step, you've got that boost and you're probably only operating between, I'm guessing, maybe 8 and 10 and a half, 11,000 RPM. So you're always within that power band. Is that right?
Yeah, especially with the paddle shift, the clutchless, you never drop out of boost. So the shift is that fast that you're always in boost between gears.
Now, the next element I want to talk about is the pistons themselves and then the compression ratio. And that sort of brings up the other question is, what fuel are you running? Because that obviously drives the decision on your compression ratio.
Yeah, so 9.5 to 1 compression ratio. It's a Speed Factory Outlaw Arius piston made by CP Cirillo. And I think it's a BME rod, alloy rod. The fuel varies. So E85, E98, C85. Really depends on the application. Straight drag racing, I'd say we'd use C85 just because it's much, much safer.
No interest in moving to a full methanol fuel as opposed to alcohol-based or ethanol-based fuels?
Look, there is interest, but the only interest would be, purely speaking, of how expensive E85 fuels are getting over our methanol fuel. I think it really is getting ridiculous because we can't rely on pump quality anymore.
So you've got to go to a race-grade E85?
Yeah, so it's not like a full... I know everyone says street car, but you know, if you're driving your car to work and you need a bit of power and you put E85 out of the pump and it's sometimes E70, E75, yeah, that's cool. But when you're at this level, you don't want an E75 fuel.
So you want a guaranteed ethanol content.
So you buy a barrel that's E85 or higher, right? But the barrels are just getting ridiculously, or there's no stock because everyone's buying them. So, you know, the methanol looks extremely, you know, tempting in terms of budgets, availability, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Not, I don't, you know, power is power. You're going to make power either way. But, you know, is it like a methanol is cheaper than 98 now, you know?
I think that the thing that is worth mentioning is that the methanol does come with some significant downsides. First of all, you need to run around about twice as much fuel in order to make the same amount of power, give or take. And then obviously that affects your fuel system sizing, pumps, injectors, et cetera. And also, I mean, E85 has its problems, but methanol is another level of corrosiveness to the entire fuel system. So there's those considerations as well.
Yeah. Are you interested in expanding your automotive knowledge? Start your free lessons with us today at hpacademy.com/free.
All right, let's get back to the engine. The other element you've really gone top shelf here with is the cylinder head. So the factory cylinder head wasn't going to cut it for you. Talk us through what you've chosen.
So we've went for a 4-piston kingpin cast head. So what happens with the factory cylinder heads is they crack. So after you stop cracking your factory blocks and you go billet, then you start cracking your heads.
So we're just chasing the problems down the line. As you fix one and start making more power, you find the next weakness.
Yeah, so the head lifts, third or fourth gear, whatever, and then, you know, head cracks, whatever, et cetera, et cetera. The kingpin head has 3 times as much material. It's got more clamping force. We've tested them. There's me and 2 other guys in Australia that have had very successful results where they've put their cars on methanol, put their cars on other fuels, you know, done everything except for dry deck with a factory head and nothing's worked. We've put these heads on, coolant pressure's perfect, you know, right across the line, 30, 40 passes.
One of the biggest problems with high output turbocharged engines is always that head gasket integrity. And yes, there's different types of head gaskets, there's better stud materials, but the reality is ultimately you end up limited by the amount of material on the deck surface of the block and similarly on the deck surface of the head. So these aftermarket components, much, much thicker in those areas, makes it much more rigid, much less likely to flex. And on that note, we talked off camera, you're actually not using anything too exotic for the actual head gasket itself. Talk us through that.
Yeah, so it's just a multi-layer head gasket. We've got a stainless O-ring machined into the block and, you know, that's it. So it just crushes into the head gasket, torque the head gasket down, you know what I mean? Check your head studs every couple of passes, whatever, you know, make sure they're still torqued down correctly and that's it, man. You know, my method is always just keep it simple. As soon as you complicate things, you're never going to finish the car. Like, you've just got to find that next issue, deal with it, and then find that next issue. And eventually you just get to a point where there's no issues.
I think that's solid advice for those building project cars. It's always tempting to just continually iterate the car and never actually get it to the racetrack. But when you do that, you never really find out what the problems are that you need to work through. And you also don't get to enjoy the car on the track, which is just as important. All right, the next question that's going to be on everyone's minds is power level. Can you give us some insight into, first of all, what turbo it is, what boost pressure you're running, and what power level, even if you can give us a bit of a ballpark as to where you're at.
So the guys don't want me to say any figures on camera or whatever, but I can give you a rough ballpark. Right now it's sitting on around 56 pounds of boost, and it is a very large figure, I'd say. You know, so we're definitely in the 4 digits. We're over 1,200, I can tell you that. But we are planning on taking this car to 80, 90 PSI. It's really enjoying 56 pounds right now. So
you mentioned off camera before 56 PSI and you referred to that as low boost. Yeah. So that's still no joke.
That's SP1 as we'd call it. Yeah.
And the actual turbo spec you've got on at the moment?
Oh, so it's a next gen 8085 Precision. Absolutely love this turbo. I think it's a match made in heaven for this engine, to be honest. I never would believe that I'd be spooling a turbo this size before 6,000 RPM on a 2-liter, to be honest.
6,000, that is truly impressive. And what do you rev it out to ultimately?
We can go all the way to 12 if we really want to, you know. But
that is a very wide power band.
Yeah, it's, people think 6,000 is a little bit late, but it's not late in the K-Series, to be honest. You know, you feel it like that, you know. So, yeah.
I mean, that's one of the things that I've seen since I stopped drag racing with turbo technology. It's come so far. And back in my day, I was running a 2-litre 4G63 and we weren't seeing full boost until after 7,000 RPM revving to 11. So if you can get that sort of boost at 6, that is simply amazing. Electronics, what are you running to control this engine?
Yeah, so ECU-wise, Link G4X, we've got Motec PDM, PDM 30. I've got ProWire, who's wired the entire car in Raycam DR12. We've got Tefcel, whatever your name
is. Full mil spec loom.
Full mil spec loom. You know, a few things I didn't seal just for maintenance, like injector clips and all this and all that, because I knew I'd change them. So everything else is sealed. We've got the PRP new coil packs, which are rated to 4,000 horsepower in the right application. We have maxed the 35 ones out on this setup. We've got an Elixir fuel pump, custom made, 1,600 litre per hour. We have tested the fuel pump, and on this setup, it will do 1,500 methanol, one electric pump.
Okay, so you've got enough fuel pump to last an eternity.
Yeah, and when I'm idling, when I'm cruising around, whatever, I like, you know, I drive it to work and stuff, you know.
Streetcar.
Streetcar, yeah. It runs like a 255. You don't hear nothing. So it's extremely quiet. It's like a factory pump that can flow to, you know, 5-6 pumps. It's crazy, you know. So I give a shout out to Elixir. AI, Aftermarket Industry supplied the hanger and the FC1500, the Ventura system and all that. I love his stuff. I've never had an issue with it. I've used it for years. His engineering is top quality.
Now, I noticed in the back, you've got a nitrous bottle as well. So talk us through how you're using that nitrous. Is this just to spool the turbo on a two-step?
I've never actually used nitrous in this car. It's kind of like...
You watched the Fast and the Furious too much as a younger guy, didn't you?
It's just kind of one of those things, like when I built the car, I've noticed from past experiences, if you don't put something in, you're going to not have a place to put it. So when you build your cage and your boxes and your firewalls and stuff like that, put everything you think you're going to use and then use it later.
So future-proof the project.
Exactly. I don't want a nitrous bottle sitting next to me where my handbrake sits and stuff like that. So, you know, but in terms of spooling, I'm very happy with how it spools. Until we start racing on a slick and see how it leaves the line, I guess we might use it, you know. But if I'm not happy with the 1,500 horsepower from this turbo, I'll put another 200 in it, whatever it takes, you know.
Easy as. The other aspect of this car we obviously need to talk about is the four-wheel drive conversion, which is now, I wouldn't say commonplace with the Honda platform, but it is becoming more and more accepted, more and more common. What is the transmission that you're using and what is involved in that four-wheel drive conversion?
Yeah, so I'd say the four-wheel drive is the next K-swap. That's what I call it. So right now, this is running a Quaife sequential. It's the all-wheel drive sequential. So you've got the Quaife rear part of the box, which is their casing, and I've got a billet bell housing that mates up to a CRV transfer case.
So the CRV transfer case is the Honda part that really is the key to this four-wheel drive conversion.
Yeah, so you need the Honda transfer case, and on the back, you've got the Honda wagon or the CRV diff. The ratios just work, you know what I mean? In the middle, we've got a viscous coupler. So essentially, the wagon is so much harder to find. They're a 1980s car. None of them came to Australia. Not many went to America. They're more of a Japanese four-wheel drive sort of thing. Factory components are about $3,500, $4,000 US without shipping. Then you've got to get them. I had to get the viscous rebuilt. I had to get the diff rebuilt.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say these stock components probably really weren't designed by Honda to support 1,500 horsepower either. How reliable are they in a drag application?
Look, I've never broken anything and I've been launching this car, so it does hook to... Yeah, yeah. So I would say, like, I don't like to refer to America just because, you know, I feel like we don't see a lot of stuff that break. You know what I mean? But they're saying they're going sevens on factory components. We have seen them go sixes. So, yeah, look, it's an awesome bit of kit. And the factory stuff will do you anywhere up to 1,000. Like, you know, it's just when you really want to go drag racing, like you're going to have a three-wheel drive or you're going to have a, you know, so you want to stay in the back and all that, et cetera, et cetera. But, yeah.
All right. Ultimately, I know you haven't really laid down a full pass in this as yet. Can we get some predictions on where you think it might be running?
Yeah, so the real reason why we haven't ran a pass in this is not because of engine troubles, etc. It's actually we've had trouble finding a clutch to support the power because the car does get a lot of grip, surprisingly. So, you know, there's a lot of times where we dual pass, we get a really good 60, and then by third gear, the clutch is slipping and the pass is gone, you know. So at Cootamundra, I did a 1.5 on street tyres with 30 PSI in the tyres and then the clutch just let go and I did like a 10.5 at 100 mile per hour. So, you know, I was on the brakes halfway down the track. Hopefully, I've got a new clutch system in it now and that's just like the next thing. You know what I mean? So, if the clutch holds, we are aiming to go low 8.7s. We're trying to, for Australia, the current ET is 800.
That's so you need to be in that 7 second bracket.
Yeah, so we're trying to break the Australian 7 second, the brick wall. You know, we're trying to shoot for, and no one's on that drag car, etc. Any Honda, you know what I mean. So that's what we're aiming to do right now, and hopefully we get there. I have taken a lot of weight out of it. There's carbon roof. There's lots of carbon components, and yeah, you know, hopefully we get there.
Oh, look, mate, the car is an absolute credit to you. It is a really unique build, and we definitely wish you all the best with getting into the sevens.
Thanks, mate. I really appreciate it, and I love your channel.
Cheers.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please feel free to leave a review on whatever platform you've chosen to listen to it on. It goes a long way to help us getting the word out there. All these conversations and much more are also available in full on our High Performance Academy YouTube channel, so make sure you subscribe. It's a one-stop shop when it comes to going faster, stopping quicker, and cornering better.